intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Hello, everybody. We're back after a less of a break than last time between podcasts, I think. We missed a week, right? But it hasn't been 2 weeks, so that's good.
I think we're on like a fortnightly schedule at the moment.
Well, it's close enough, isn't it?
Which isn't really ideal, let's be honest.
I know. Hello, Tim. How's it going?
Hello, Peter. I'm horribly sick. How are you?
Okay. Pretty tired. I mostly want to do this podcast so I can complain about EA's astronomically terrible Gamescom press conference.
Yeah, oddly enough, if you weren't going to mention that this earlier, I was going to ask you about it almost immediately.
Which could still be happening now, as far as I know, because it was still happening at 1:30. Which was 3 hours after it began. It's now almost 3 o'clock where I am, so I hope it's finished. But it may not have done.
I'm going to check right now.
See if they managed. For all I know, they're spending like 3 hours on Star Wars VR, because that was the way it was going.
It's finished.
It's finished. Wow. Finally. I'm pleased. I tuned in thinking, oh, it's just going to be, you know, usual thing, a bit like an hour and a half kind of thing. An hour later, they were still talking about fucking FIFA. And I like FIFA, but even I was bored.
The thing is, though, Peter, they weren't talking about FIFA. They were talking about FIFA Ultimate Team. The trading card sticker book is.
The most boring part of FIFA, yes. FIFA the collectible card game. They even managed to sneak in some stuff about FIFA 17 on mobile, which was, I really thought the press conference was reaching its nadir when that happened. But no, it was actually the point where it reached its nadir was when they were talking about some Ultimate Team cards, and they were saying, like, players will, you know, their stats, some of the cards, their stats will fluctuate depending on their form, you know, whether they've been in a best team of the week and stuff like that. So, you know, you might want to think about whether you want to transfer that card after someone's had a good week to get more money for him, etc., etc. And the EA guy said, yeah, so it's going to be a bit like the stock exchange. Because I know when I'm looking forward to a new football game, I want it to be just like playing the fucking stock exchange.
Yeah. That's what everyone wants, you know, regardless of games, you've got to have a stock exchange. I mean, GTA 5 had a stock exchange in it.
Yeah, which that almost makes sense. Sort of. Because it was about heists, you know, and if nothing else, provides a primary target for thieves and criminals. Most of the people on it are thieves and criminals, allegedly.
Well, I think they're mostly psychopaths. Thieves and criminals is debatable. Psychopaths, I think, is less so.
Yeah, take that, international capitalism.
No, I'm entirely serious. That's true, isn't it? Most people who do well in business are psychopaths, because that's how you do well in business.
They're on the scale, aren't they? I mean, there's a small difference between being on that scale and, you know, dressing up like your mum and stabbing people.
That's not really a psychopath, though, Peter. That's a bit different.
It's a serial killer. What if the serial killer was a psychopath as well?
Are we going to start talking about American Psycho in a moment?
I thought we were going to talk about John Ronson's psychopath test book, because that sounded like where you were going. But
we could talk about that. Have you read the, what was the name of the guy who wrote a load of books? He was in the SAS and
Andy McNabb.
Yes.
Is that right?
I don't know where
I pulled that name from, but something in my brain said, say this.
I can never think of Andy McNabb without thinking of that one bit from Spaced.
That's probably where I have that name.
I'm Andy McNab. I'm Andy McNab. I'm Andy McNab. I'm Andy McNab. I'm Andy McDowell. I think it was Andy McNab, but he wrote a book with a...
Where are you going with this?
There is a reason. He wrote a book with a, I believe it was with a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I can't remember which. And yes, people, there is a very big difference between those two terms, as I learned when I lived with a psychologist. It was, I can't remember what it's called, something like The Good Psychopath's Guide to Success. And it's basically an in-depth investigation into, you know, what a psychopath is, how they function, and how that can actually be incredibly useful in modern life.
Well, you know, being extraordinarily ruthless, for example, can help with some things, I'm sure. It's not what I'd like to do.
In Andy McNab's case, it mostly helped because, you know, he was put in all sorts of really dangerous, life-threatening situations, and he didn't freak out about this. He was perfectly calm and in control.
So is he really in the SAS? Because there was another guy who wrote a bunch of books who it turned out he wasn't really in the SAS, but I don't know who that was.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look up and see whether it actually was Andy McNab. But it was one of the it was one of the famous blokes what was in the SAS and wrote a load of military porn books.
Andy McStab. So FIFA
protagonist
then.
Protagonist for next Call of Duty game confirmed.
Andy McStab. Well,
you know what? I'm changing my Steam username and I'm installing Advanced Warfare and going online with that.
Andy McStab. Someone surely already has.
Probably.
We'll talk about Norman Sky in a little bit. That's another good protagonist name.
Yes.
I don't know if I need to be bothered to talk about the FIFA Ultimate Team stuff, really, because it's just
how long?
It's just other ways for you to use your cards. It's like, look,
Peter, nobody gives a shit about FIFA Ultimate Team. Don't even bother trying to explain it. Just how long did that section go on for?
I mean, a lot of people do give a shit about it, but they're probably not listening to this.
Peter, I can guarantee if you start talking about Ultimate Team, I won't be listening to this.
It took about 40, 45 minutes.
Just on Ultimate Team?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
I'm not kidding. That's, you know, maybe 40, maybe 45.
The part that made me laugh hysterically was when you told me about what happened directly after they finished talking about FIFA.
They were like, right, okay, yeah, we've almost wrapped up the FIFA bit. And, you know, the people on chat and NeoGAF were all going, thank fuck for that. And now we're going to talk about NHL 17. So I don't know who scheduled this, but
who gives a shit about Titanfall, Battlefield?
Yeah,
no, all about NHL.
I think I don't think they actually had that much on. I mean, the Titanfall and Battlefield sections went on forever as well, but I think it was just. I think it was like E3 where they had a bunch of YouTubers and esports people playing it and yelling over the top of it. So, which, you know, I guess shows you some of the game, I guess, which is that's good, but. Yeah, information-wise, I don't know how informative that was. Marco Reus of football fame showed up for the FIFA bit as well, and then they played an actual game of FIFA.
I don't know who that is.
He's a German man who plays for Borussia Dortmund.
Okay, well, it makes sense that he's at Gamescom then.
He's going to be on the cover.
Probably didn't have trouble for.
No, he didn't, know. And he's going to be on the cover of FIFA 17. And he was given the old PR spiel about how much he loved FIFA and how much he played FIFA and stuff. And I thought, oh yeah, all right, we'll see when you actually play a game of it. And then he scored two goals within about 15 in-game minutes. So fair play. He does seem to be quite good.
Was the AI terrible?
He was playing against other people. And they weren't like letting him score, as far as I could tell. So,
were they punters or were they EA staff? Or
I think one of them was a YouTube man.
Oh, okay.
One of them was either a YouTube man or a musician man. I'm not entirely sure.
So it was likely fair competition.
And yeah, it seemed like it. It wasn't like this team's good versus these people have never touched FIFA before in their lives. Yeah. So anyway, that's FIFA for you.
Really long and boring press conferences that go on for far too long to talk about what is essentially modern day Panini sticker books.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Enough of that. Tim, you played Norman Sky for an hour, maybe?
An hour? Yeah.
Well, that's more than I've played it for, so...
Really?
Well, I don't have it, so...
Oh, okay. I thought you wrote some stuff about it. I thought you...
Yeah, I did. No, I just used my amazing ability to fake it till you make it to write stuff about it. I was only compiling, like, performance tweaks, and it was the usual stuff, like... disable the VSync in game and enable it through your NVIDIA or AMD panel. And
I think the part that fooled me was when one of your tips was that you have to press E on the start screen to start.
No, I'd just seen so many people saying that I took that as accurate.
Yeah, it took me about 15 seconds of watching that screen before I went, for fuck's sake, this is a fucking prompt, isn't it?
Yeah, it did seem. I looked it up because some video and stuff, and yeah, it looked quite confusing. Yes. But anyway, talk me through your Norman Sky experience. So you buy it on Steam, you download it.
I played it for an hour and I refunded it because I do not believe it is worth £39.99.
Right. Why is that?
I do believe it would probably be worth £15.
Almost like if it were some sort of indie game made by an indie team or studio.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
like it is.
Yeah, you know, that would make more. I'd probably, you know, I'd still probably be complaining and going, well, this isn't as good as I expected. This isn't quite what I was hoping for, and so on and so forth.
But there do seem to be one or two things that were supposed to be in the game that aren't in the game.
I believe the big one is depth, but
ooh.
That sounds harsh, but I mean, that is one of the big complaints is there is no depth to the crafting, there is no depth to the trading, there is no depth to the combat, there is...
I think there's an interesting story to be told about the development of this game somewhere that we're not going to get all of at the moment. I don't know where to look to point fingers necessarily, and maybe doing that is unfair. I don't know.
The thing is, I can totally understand that there are people out there who are really enjoying this. I can completely understand that. It feels, and I don't mean this, I hate the fact that I have to say I don't mean this in a disparaging way. But it feels a bit like a walking simulator. It's just with a bit of crafting and combat and stuff shoehorned in. Because a lot of the game is wandering around going, wow, this is really fucking pretty.
Look at the geology that the procedurally generated universe has created for me to look at.
It's like, that looks a bit like a giraffe. That's quite cool. I was going to say,
look at the weird, demented creatures that this game has put together.
Yeah.
But I've heard that even that starts to wear thin quite quickly, though.
That started to wear thin on me about the time I reached my third planet.
Right.
Get bored of that stuff pretty fucking quickly. Because I've been playing games for 28 years at this point, I think. I've seen quite a lot of stuff.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Man, I've seen things, man. You weren't there. But
Cobra Mark III's on fire off the bow of Lava 3, or whatever that planet was called.
Okay, you've just mangled that fucking quote, and the worst part is I can't even think of what the quote was. Starship's on fire off the shoulder of Orion.
Shoulder of Orion, yeah.
Sea beams mm-hmm. glittering in the darkness.
Yeah, them too. Does No Man's Sky have either of those things? Does it have attack chips on fire at all? Did you see any?
Maybe. I didn't see any. I didn't do any space combat. I didn't find anything.
How did the PC version run for you?
It ran fine with a couple of exceptions. There's an awful lot of stuttering.
That was the main thing, which I believe has maybe been improved now. The experimental beta patch thing that they've got going at the moment says it significantly improves performance on like multi-core CPUs. Right. So that may significantly help. I don't know.
Possibly.
I don't have the game. Hopefully.
Yeah, you would hope so. You know, it looks nice, but there is still no real reason why it should not be running much better than it does. The UI is god awful. Just the fact that you have to click and hold the mouse button.
Is that literally what it is? Because I couldn't quite figure out what people were meaning when they said that. Is it just that you have to hold the button down for a long time, basically?
Yeah, it's basically the cursor is like a little wheel, and you hold down the mouse button and the wheel sort of circles around and fills up.
Got it.
So when you're going through the options and you're like, no, I want this to not be running at 30 frames a second locked. I would like this set to whatever. You have to like move to the option and hold down the button and wait. And this is not particularly clear either. For a while I thought the options menu wasn't working, because normally, you know, you see the arrow, you click on the arrow.
Or even just press D or A or an arrow key to cycle or whatever,
It's like a default 30 FPS lock is really weird as well.
Yes, it is.
It does not feel like it has been built for the PC particularly. It's not great. And there just doesn't appear to be much of a game there. It just feels empty and lifeless.
It feels the
reason why I say it feels like a walking simulator is it feels like it needs an actual game in there. Like it either needs to really flesh out the combats, having lots of different factions in space that you can align yourselves with and do bits and pieces for that will help you out in various ways, or it needs to have some sort of base building construction stuff. You build a hub and so on. Maybe you set up some trading routes or something. It needs something, because right now it is basically go to a planet, harvest it for the exact same materials you have seen on every other planet to date. Maybe look around to see if there is a crashed spaceship which has an upgrade for you on it. Turn those tools into fuel for your hyperdrive or what have you. Go to a new system. Repeat.
Meet an alien. He might teach you a word, possibly. Yes. That's the other thing that I find weird, is that it's all about like, oh, you're discovering these planets, but then people are mostly already there. It seems like, you know, there's a space station in orbit with ships landing on it, and there's an alien there, and it's like, well, I'm not discovering this, then am I? This isn't. It's already discovered.
Very much.
You got Christopher Columbus syndrome. You think, oh, I've discovered America. So there's people there already, mate. You didn't discover shit.
I think it's more the sense you're the only one, the only human or whatever the fuck you are.
Yeah, okay. But are you human? That's the question, isn't it? Because you never see yourself and you never see anyone else, because that's a thing that doesn't happen anymore, even though it was supposed to happen.
God knows. I think that's kind of the thing. It's sort of like, okay, you are someone who has randomly been dumped in some long, far-flung corner of the galaxy. Mm. Off you go. It needs to have an actual game attached for me, which I think if you go back to any of the other podcasts where we talk about No Man's Sky, that is what I've been saying for a year.
Yeah, and I mean, I've, like, In contrast to the usual 50 trailers and far too much information being released about a lot of games, I was, in a lot of senses, quite pleased that there were keeping it close to their chest and, you know, going, well, look, there's, you know, there's trading in it and there's visiting planets and stuff. It's like, all right, okay, they just don't want to talk about all the stuff. Yep. But now it becomes clear why they didn't want to talk about all the stuff, because there kind of wasn't much there.
Well, that's the odd thing. I linked you to a Reddit thread earlier about someone who noted all the times they did talk about stuff.
Yes, that's true,
which
actually,
they claimed would be in the game and isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not just the multiplayer. Hey, you might meet up with someone in a very rare instance. Actually, no, you won't. That doesn't.
They did. Did they ever actually say that? Because the Twitter feed, Sean Murray's Twitter feed, when those two players met up, he suggested that it's because the servers are overloaded at the moment.
Right. No. Well. Yeah. Okay. So yes, before release. On multiple occasions, he said it would be very rare for people to meet up, but yes, you will be able to see other people in that instance. I don't know if people have substantively tried to meet up again, like post-launch, to see if it was a server thing. But I don't think it is. I think I just think there's no. I don't think it has that component.
Yeah, that's the impression I get as well.
And the weird thing with that is. I've seen, and I'm pretty sure these are real, I've seen videos of people with early retail copies with Peggy stickers. Like they have an extra sticker over the Peggy rating. And if you peel that off, it's got multiplayer underneath, but the new one doesn't have it on there. So that's fucking weird as well.
Yeah,
I don't know.
From what I can gather,
I don't know what happened with this game, but it should have been delayed more. Maybe But then they just couldn't, because it had already been delayed quite substantially already.
From what I can gather, and I don't know this for sure. This is speculation, but from what I can tell, the game was in much better shape about 6 months ago, in terms of all the features that it was going to have. Like I don't believe that Sean Murray lied at any point. I believe that this was all stuff that was in the game, because they showed quite a lot of it. They talked in detail about quite a lot of it. There is quite a lot of evidence of that. And there is video footage of some of this stuff as well, which is just not in the game. And I get the sense that basically because there was no way they could bug fix and balance all of that as a 15 strong team before the release date. And they ended up essentially cutting it.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's not good, is it?
No, it's not.
That's not to do that, but to not. I mean, I strongly suspect that Hello Games would not be allowed to say any of that stuff due to contractual Sony obligations. Mm. I imagine even if they wanted to say, shit, guys, we've had to cut a load of stuff, they probably wouldn't be able to.
The question,
I don't know, again, speculation, etc.
I think the question is going to be whether a lot of this stuff is going to come in patches. As has happened with other games. One game that I love / fucking hate, called Kingdom, recently got a major free update that added a load of stuff, major enough that the game was essentially completely re-released under a new name.
All right.
Which was totally free to anyone who'd bought it previously, and I now have Kingdom Classic and the new version in my Steam library. Slain is another good example where that was a complete fucking mess at launch.
And that was
fucking awful when it launched. No exaggeration, that was practically unplayable. And they went through some serious shit with that. From what I can gather, everyone on the team left the project except for the art director. And so he basically had to pull together new programmers and everything else, and then they had to spend a couple of months understanding the code. And then that got re-released as Slain Back from Hell. And, you know, again, that is now a really good game.
I guess a similar example in the space realm would be,
Star Citizen?
No, I'm talking about games that exist, Tim.
that exists somewhere. Well, just, well, you know, It's not going to be what people think it is.
In alpha form. It exists in a broken alpha form and a speech given by Gary Oldman. But
there's a space station.
Yeah, it's got a whole space station with physics that don't work.
Yeah.
And doors you can fall through. And Anyway. Not that game. It's a game in inverted commas. no, I'm talking about Elite Dangerous, which when it came out was great and functioned and everything, but was kind of lacking in stuff to do. You could trade and shoot some people and fly around and things like that, but you know, that is a game where they've steadily added a bunch of things, some of which are paid expansions obviously, but it could very much be that kind of thing. They've already talked about some sort of rudimentary based building for No Man's Sky in upcoming thing, but I don't know how that's going to work, because you trip around between planets, right? So where would you build your base? Wouldn't your base be your ship?
Who knows?
Yeah.
The worrying thing about that is he previously said, you know, all the DLC would be free, and now
immediately was like, well...
now that it's out, he's gone, well, okay, maybe not all of it.
Maybe, yeah.
He has, in fairness, he didn't, I've seen a few people saying, oh, he's totally backtracked and he said all the DLC is going to cost. He didn't say that.
No,
what he actually said was that, you know, they would do as much free stuff as they could if they felt they had to charge for something then. But it's very hard to trust the words that come out of his mouth at this point.
It is. He's in a real bad situation with regards to, having trust issues with the wider community.
I have a theory that he is actually Peter Molyneux.
Reborn with a beard.
Like, when Metal Gear Solid 5 got announced and it was supposedly a game by some new Finnish studio and actually Hideo Kojima in bandages or something. I think that's it. I think that this is actually Peter Molyneux with one of those
fake beards.
No, not even that. It's like, you know how on Skype you can use the video conferencing thing where it makes you look like a dog or what have you, and it matches your mouth movements. Yeah. It's just a very sophisticated one of them, and it's Peter Molyneux.
He's got one of those with an indie dev setting, and he's just clicked that.
Yeah. Although instead of turtlenecks, you see, this is the giveaway. You've never seen Sean Murray in a turtleneck, but I've also never seen him outside of a checkered shirt.
That's the yep. That is 100% correct.
So I think that's the thing. After the whole
Molyneux, you've done it again.
the 22 cans thing. Now he's rebranded as Hello Games.
I've met a lot of, this is a Peter Molyneux tangent. A lot of Americans seem to think his name is Molinex, which sounds like a drug. But just to let you, anyone listening will know, because we say his name often enough, but it's not Molinex, it's Molyneux.
Yes.
It's got French connotations.
I admit I was confused about this when I was very young, because, you know,
I'm sure,
didn't speak any French. So when Syndicate came out, I was probably like 8 or something like that. And I was never sure how to pronounce it, but I did very quickly learn how to pronounce it, because I live on the Isle of Man where we have the TT races, and one of the prominent TT riders has the surname Molyneux.
Oh, right.
So I learned it from there.
For a while when I was younger, I thought Blackburn Defender was called Graham Lesox, but he's not.
I still cannot pronounce the names of most footballers. So.
There's some tricky ones. That is for sure.
I think it says a lot about cultural integration that people can come up with all of these like really offensive chants to yell, and yet they manage to get the pronunciation of these what are incredibly difficult names for the English tongue. They manage to get them right. So, you know, doing a lot for culture.
Mm-hmm. I've always said football does a lot for culture. It's not all of it positive.
On the one hand, horrifically racist chants. On the other hand, they're pronouncing these names right.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. That's No Man's Sky, I guess. It's really what it was cracked up to be. It has some interesting backstory that we don't know the full story of yet. Doesn't work very well on PC at the moment.
I do have minor sort of refunders regret in that I keep thinking I wouldn't actually mind popping back into it for another 15 minutes. I would not pay £40 for the privilege.
Yeah, I mean, there's some, like you said, there's something to it, and I'm sure you're right in that there's, well, I know there are people who are enjoying it.
Oh, yeah.
I think because the people that DDoSed Jim Sterling's site when he gave it 5 out of 10 presumably quite like No Man's Sky.
To a slightly pathological
degree.
I'm going to be perfectly honest, right? If I had reviewed No Man's Sky, unless something vastly changed over the course of the hours and hours of play, which is possible because I've heard a number of people say it was amazing to start, then it got boring, and then they started to find it really, you know, once you break through that barrier, it gets way more interesting.
Break through the boredom barrier.
Yeah, essentially. You start to understand the limitations of the generation, you start to understand how clever it is and the things it's doing and so on and so forth.
I'm making a point.
Had I reviewed it and had none of this affected me, had I reviewed it based on my first hour of play, essentially, I would not have given it 5 out of 10. Because for £40, it does not deserve a 5 out of 10.
Well, maybe it gets better, you know, as you say.
Yeah, this is why we finish games before we review them.
It's very clever technologically. Yes, it is. That's very impressive. So is the Large Hadron Collider, but I don't want to play that on Steam, you know? Well, actually, I do. That's a good
example. I totally do. That was a really bad analogy, Peter.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of incredibly impressive technological achievements out there, but they aren't video games. They're, you know...
This is a totally weird tangent, right? But you've just reminded me, since you've said Large Hadron Collider, and I'm going to go and see if this game is actually on Steam.
Don't tell me the Large Hadron Collider actually is on Steam.
The Large Hadron Collider is not on Steam.
Okay.
Let's do a quick Google. No, it's not. But there is a game, a Japanese visual novel. Which apparently is not going on Steam, and apparently they do not have permission to release it on Steam for some reason.
Has it got naughty bits?
No.
Oh,
it actually doesn't.
Okay.
It's called Steins Gate.
I heard that name somewhere. Yes. Probably from you.
I don't know. I don't think I've mentioned it to you before. It's fairly well known. I only picked up on it recently. It's pretty good, you know, visual novel. Fairly interesting concept in terms of a guy discovers that he can send text messages back in time, essentially.
Okay.
The interesting thing about this is that the villains of the game. Mild spoilers here, I think, or I can't remember how early this is revealed, but
I don't care. Yeah. But for any Steins Gate, anyone who's thinking they might want to play Steins Gate, just pop forward for 30 seconds, I guess.
I will say, having played Steins Gate, I kind of want to go and play the other games they release. But the villains are CERN, and the Large Hadron Collider is actually.
is it going to open a black hole or
It is part of their evil plan on time travel research and so on and so forth. And yes, they are actually the villains. I think it changed their name slightly. Like, instead of CERN, it's Kern or Hearn or something like that.
Stern.
But it is very clearly them, and like in a lawsuit potential kind of way, which is weird.
Yeah,
but I like it.
Yes,
it's a game in which in the future it turns out that CERN have taken over the world.
Well, you never know. What if they're all lizard men, Tim?
I've got to say, honestly, that actually added something to the game for me, because it was like, okay, it's actually taking real world organizations, concepts, you know, I can relate to this a bit more than if they went, oh, this entirely fictional organization doing fictional research and so on.
Should we segue from one weird Japanese thing to another and talk about Conception 2?
How do you talk about Conception 2?
I don't know. I probably should have read your article in preparation. All I know is things that you've been telling me on Skype. Things like, well, now I need to go and not have sex with this lady by putting my ether in her star womb.
Yeah, that about sums it up. And for the record, what? Peter made up none of those terms.
No, that's completely, well, yeah. I'm repeating it from what I've been told. Just, yep. So
that is how Babby is formed.
Okay, we finally figured it out. That's how a girl gets pregnant.
A man puts his ether, and the girl takes it and puts it into the star womb, and then I'm not quite sure where the Matryoshka, the Russian nesting doll, is involved, but that's in there somewhere.
Is the Matryoshka in the star womb, or...?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's very confusing.
It sounds very confusing. What? So... Yes. It's difficult to get an in with questions with a game like this.
Yep.
You play as who, or what? Are you the star womb?
You are a person... Right, okay, you're on a planet where there are these big portals that open up and monsters spew out of them.
I know who to blame for that. It's Stern. Or
yes, obviously. And people between the ages of 16 and 18 will suddenly find brands on their wrists. And they are then taken to the academy because they are the chosen ones and they have to go and fight the monsters and so on and so forth. And one of the ways in which they can do that is they have really strong concentrations of ether and they can make star children through a sacred ritual in which the man's ether goes into the woman's star womb. And,
is this The Witcher? It's about special chosen people fighting monsters and impregnating a lot of people.
Well...
But by magic, because he doesn't really impregnate people.
I mean, the witches are sterile, and they're not so much chosen ones as children forced to go through horrific rites with a 90% mortality rate.
Well, you know, it's the same thing.
Really. Basically. you play as some guy who has a ludicrously high ether rating, which is so high that he can actually go into the evil portals. He's referred to as God's gift. I'm fairly certain there is a joke in there about, you know, God's gift to women and so on and so forth. So you get a bunch of star children who serve as units in battle and you go into the portals and you try to shut them down. It's a JRPG that really desperately wants to be Persona 3, and it is not Persona 3.
Is it sort of turn-based fighty stuff?
Yeah.
JRPG style turn-based, I guess.
The dungeons are randomly generated and you can see the monsters, and depending on the direction you run into them, you might get an advantage in combat or not, like if you run into them from behind, or if you're trying to run away and they manage to hit you, then they'll get the first turn and so on and so forth. But yeah, JRPG stuff, very positioning heavy as you choose which direction you want to attack a monster from. And, you know, they might be weak to attacks from the rear, but that might also be where they're charging up a big attack that they're going to hit. So you need to weigh the risks and so on and so forth. And then you go back to town and do some social events at the academy to make friends with the girls so that you can make stronger star children with them. To help you out in fights in the next dungeon and so on and so forth.
Okay. So,
And apparently there is a mini game where you touch the girls, but I haven't got that far.
You showed me a screenshot. It said, but to be fair, it did say you have to listen first. Yes. So hopefully you have to listen for consent.
And in fairness, is that not, you know, a microcosm of some of relationships where you talk to people, you listen to them, and then you touch them in the right place?
Well, as long, you know.
If you touch them in the wrong place, they get really pissed off with you.
It's missing implied consent, which concerns me a little bit, I have to say. But assuming that that is in there.
That's why I say, you know, part of relationships, sure, you know, there is talk and listening and so on, and that builds up the trust and the consent, and then, you know, you touch them in hopefully a place in which they consent for you to touch them.
Right.
You know, it might be just something as simple as holding their hand.
And then you have a star child, and then you fight monsters and save the universe, I guess.
Then you put your ether into their star womb, in a church run by a pervy old man. Who talks about how well endowed this year's recruits are, and how if he was younger, he would have enough ether to create millions of star children.
I've seen Spotlight. I know this is accurate.
It's not an easy game to get a handle on. The best way I can describe it is just it's a bit like Persona 3, only not anywhere near as good.
It's got a very positive reaction on Steam. But then it's an anime type game with like touching ladies in it, so that's kind of goes without saying, doesn't it?
That means that out of interest are like 90% of the positive review stuff like I touched a girl, lol, 10 out of 10.
I could check, but I can't be bothered, probably. No,
that'll make me want to kill everyone again.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I hope there are lots of well-written reviews that say why it's a great game and they like it.
It's the sort of thing which, if I remember rightly, when it came out on the Vita, you know, most of the reviews were kind of 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10. It's in the it's okay, but it's nothing particularly special. You'll probably get a bit bored of it range. And when it came out on the Vita, it was £30, while I think it's about a tenner on Steam, which obviously affords it a bit more leeway.
I mean, I have to say, most of the stuff that sounds interesting is just the weird fringe narrative plot stuff, honestly.
I like the idea behind the tactical combat, although at this point, this early on, it hasn't gotten in-depth enough to be particularly special, and I think I got bored with the Vita version long before it got anywhere approaching interesting. And I do like the Persona style where the dungeon is only part of it, but Persona always handled that an awful lot better. Like Persona, doing the dungeon was only ever one part. Like you could literally spend an in-game month not doing the dungeon if you wanted to, and just do it for 2 or 3 days at the end of the month to get yourself ready. You know, you had to worry about going to school and making friends and passing your exams. And, you know, you had to divide up your time between sort of studying and hanging out with people. And, you know, that it had quite a lot going for it. It made it feel like, you go into dungeons and fight things, but that's half of the game. The other half is, you know, a sort of Sims style life simulation thing. And as you gradually watch the world around you fall to shit, things get more and more desperate. Whereas with this, it feels a bit more like, oh, okay, you can do 3 social events. Right, off to the dungeon again.
Right, it's more less open with its choice, I guess. You just, it's kind of a that's the structure. You do a couple of things in town, then it's off to dungeon, back to town. Off
that
to dungeon,
and Persona's characters, world building, etc., etc., are all really fucking good. Why do we not have Persona on PC yet? For fuck's sake, Atlas.
I've liked what I've seen of, like, I haven't seen much of Persona, but whenever they release a trailer or something, it's like, oh, you haven't just done a normal shitty video game trailer. You've actually made something interesting.
They very occasionally do normal shitty video game trailers, but that's very rare. They tend to be a lot weirder.
Is Persona 5 going to be on the PlayStation 4?
Yes.
In the Westlands?
Yes. I think it's PS3 and PS4. I actually mentioned in my article about Conception, I basically said, you know, Atlas, why don't we have Persona on the PC yet? If Sony are holding a gun to your head, send out a tweet with the word Raspberry in it.
And we'll know.
Well, that's the thing. It's what, like, Atlas ports a lot of their stuff to PC.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Arc System Works have ported a lot of their stuff to PC. You know, we've got the Blaze Blue series, Guilty Gear, and yet the Persona fighting games are notably absent from that. Persona 3 was released on the PS2 and the PSP. Persona 4 has been released on the PS2 and the Vita. They so have not Sony been centric. On any Sony systems. Like, Persona Q was on the 3DS. There are, you know, the Shin Megami Tensei series in general, which is the Persona is a sub-series of that. You know, they go across various systems. But yeah, it's weird that we haven't seen 3 and 4 on PC, and I don't like it because they are fucking brilliant.
I mean, it could happen. You know, we've got stuff like Earth Defense Force and Little King's Story and all kinds of weird stuff on PC that I never in a million years really thought would be on there. So
yeah, I totally agree. It just... the fact that we haven't makes me wonder if there is some sort of weird behind the scenes licensing deal.
Yeah, because I mean that is a big one that you would think is, yes, let's do this. We will make a lot of money by doing it. So
I can't really see. I don't know. I didn't think Sony had that big of an involvement in it. That's all.
Yeah.
It's an odd one, and I keep meaning to try and corner Atlas about this, but I don't know anyone at Atlas.
I imagine they wouldn't be able to say anything, presupposing that there is some sort of situation where they literally can't release it on PC. They also probably can't necessarily say that. I don't know.
Probably. I mean, I remember when I was trying to find out why Fatal Frame 4 wasn't getting a Western release, and I was bouncing around between Nintendo's European offices and the Japanese developer and the Western team who had handled the previous ports, I think it was, and each of them were blaming the others.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's some situation like with how... Night Dive tried to get No One Lives Forever re-released, and basically everyone passed on responsibility to someone else, and no one could dig up the relevant legal document from their archives to prove. No one could prove who really owned it, but they were all very adamant that if you tried to re-release it, someone was going to get sued. Yeah. So, all right.
Which is
a bit of a shit situation.
I think, I mean, that's a sadder situation, because if there's, you know, I don't like seeing games disappear, and I know there are one or two games out there which there are no known extant copies of, and I'm not happy about this. In this day and age, so much digital backups, I don't like games vanishing. And at least in this case, you know, the Persona series is still doing really well, and Atlas clearly hold the rights. But yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I keep meaning to look into it, but honestly, I have no idea where to begin.
No, it's hard to say.
Yeah. We will see. Maybe I'll send out some feeler emails and try to cultivate some contacts.
I have like one Atlas PR person, but I don't think they're particularly high ranking. I don't know if they'd be able to tell you anything, really.
You've just hurt their feelings, Peter.
Yeah, I do that.
Not as much as I do. Blacklisted. Definitely
not as much as you do. Tim Scourge of PR McDonald.
I've only been blacklisted once.
Yeah, were you officially blacklisted, or is it just, are we just assuming?
I have had no response to any emails I have sent to that PR company.
I mean, that does kind of indicate, doesn't it?
Yeah. I admit I haven't sent very many recently. I don't know whether Paul still gets responses from them. I think he might. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
I mean, you can always try contacting them. If I remember rightly, this was back when we were still Ink Gamers, so maybe they won't notice.
I can just pretend to be someone else and just not mention.
You just say like I won't risk it. But if you just say, "Oh, I'm Peter Parrish from PC Invasion," hello,
right? Sure, I'm co-editor US editor or whatever the fuck I am. I don't know.
Yeah. We can basically make up our own job titles. It's great.
I can really impress people by saying I am the US editor.
Yeah.
What other staff are there? Well, basically nobody.
But... Well, there's Tim. He's sort of the editor for the Isle of Man or the UK or Europe or whatever the fuck he feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a different regional jurisdiction.
And, you know, there's obviously all of our freelancers, although we don't have any.
Hypothetically, we might have.
Yeah. You're definitely in charge of all of the people who want to work for us but don't.
Yeah. I would happily be in charge of those people if we had money to pay them with. I'd get them started on things right away.
Yeah. Let's not talk about our financial situation or complain about any of this shit anymore, shall we? Let's talk about some games. What have you played?
Well, the main thing I've played, unfortunately, we can't discuss. I mean, I think we can say what it is. It's Deus Ex: Mankind Divided. Yes.
We've both played that.
Yeah, I think it's known that the review embargo for that is this Friday.
It is known.
So there will be a review this Friday.
Yeah.
We'll also be doing a PC technical type piece at some point. The NDA embargo stuff is pretty stringent on certain things. So the review definitely on Friday. Other stuff probably for launch is what it looks like for that.
Likely launch or shortly after. Which, in fairness, makes sense, because any technical bits and pieces are going to have to take into account the day one patch and the final tweaking, because we did get code for this fairly early.
That is the thing, yeah. I don't really want to be writing performance stuff when I know that it's going to change in, like, 2 days' time, you know? It's a bit pointless.
I mean, I kind of get the sense that code was sent out sufficiently early because Gamescom, they wanted to make sure that people actually had time to play it, which is really good of them.
We got it super early.
Yeah, this does mean that inevitably, you know, the last month of the game's development is a shitload of bug fixing, and it changes a lot from day to day.
Yes.
So yeah, any technical comparisons that we could make now would probably be entirely inaccurate for when the game came out.
That said, were this build to be released, It wouldn't be a shit show.
No.
I'm not gonna say any more than that.
It is, despite what I said then about how, you know, bugs fixing every day and so on, this build is, it's not a mess. It is totally playable and so on and so forth. But we can't talk about it.
We're in dangerous territory, Tim.
Yeah.
Please. I already tried to negotiate for taking screenshots of menus and was shot down. So this is definitely dangerous territory.
I know, Peter. I know.
So let's move on. Other than that, I played more Witcher 3.
Oh, really?
Back to that. Yeah. It only took me 40 hours, but I'm on Skellige now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're in the third and technically final area, except that you've got a shitload of game to go that doesn't take place in Skellige.
I assumed I'd be coming back from Skellige.
Yeah, you're in the final hub of the game, should we say.
Well, because there was loads of stuff I hadn't done still in Novigrad and stuff, but it was like, well, some of this is too high level. And I kind of want to go to Skellige now, so I'll just leave this other stuff.
Yeah.
And
if you're a high enough level for it later. If you're a high enough level for Skellige, go to Skellige. Why not?
Yeah. I did, and you know what? I really like what they have done with some of the UI stuff in what I imagine must have been a myriad of patches between the last time I played it and the other week. So like now, crafting stuff is quite a bit less irritating. You can quite easily, if you're just like missing one thing for a crafting recipe, but you have the ingredients to make that thing, it gives you a very quick link to just like go, do you just want to make this other dark iron ingot or whatever?
Oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, it is. It's really useful.
That is incredibly useful, because I remember when I was trying to make a fucking masterwork griffin sword or whatever it was, and I was like, okay, right, so I need six of these. I had a piece of paper in front of me. I was noting.
I can imagine.
I am not an exaggeration. I was noting down like, right, this requires all of those. Right. Okay. And to make one of those, I need, okay, so I need these three things. And so I'm going to need, right, I'm going to need six of those. And then there's this, which, I had to actually like sit there and calculate what I needed.
No, it's a lot more helpful now. So that's good. And actually, and the UI for just organizing your swords and potions and all that stuff is just a bit more nicely laid out and organized and everything. So that's all really good, because that was a thing that kind of annoyed me about The Witcher 3. Still really like it. It's got really good quest construction and dialogue and characters and all of that. You are correct about the combat still, Tim, that the combat is not amazing. It's functional, it's tolerable, it's fine. It probably, you know,
look, everyone,
but it's an 80-hour game, so therefore it's going to get a bit shit by the end.
I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, but I stand by my 8 out of 10. This is not a game I have a regret about.
No, but,
I also stand by the fact that Hearts of Stone is a 9 out of 10, because that is a fucking brilliant expansion.
Yeah, I'm not nearly good enough to play that yet, and I don't
know.
You are coming
up on one of my favourite bits of the game, though.
I did think
when you're done in Skellige.
I did the sort of the funeral wake bit.
All right.
That's pretty much where I'm at. So I just had sex on a stuffed unicorn thing, which is a bit weird, but you know.
Have you decided which of the girls you're pursuing?
I guess I have, because I sent Triss away with the wizards.
Ah.
I don't know if that meant I made a choice there. It seemed like a good decision, though, because all the mages were being persecuted. So I thought, well, I don't really want to ask her to stay. And also, she seems like a good person to be in charge of all the people going away on the boat. So,
yeah, I'll do that. If I recall correctly, if you sent her away with them and then that isn't followed up with her coming back and saying that she couldn't leave, then yeah, she's gone.
Oh, I gave her a snog at a party. I guess that wasn't enough.
I can't remember what the requirements are for it. I think that is part of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something else that I can't fucking remember.
I wasn't actively pursuing Yennefer, but we ended up banging on a unicorn, so I guess maybe now I am. I'm not sure. So maybe her, I guess. They both seem nice. They're nice people.
Yennefer's kind of a bitch, but I like that about her.
She, you know, she's just very sure about what she's doing.
She's
in
a
life.
Snarky asshole, and quite frankly, that. In fairness, that's pretty much my type. So,
well, there you go. No problem. No problem then.
Not really. Though I went with Triss. Because Triss has been in all three games. So,
quite like the herbalist lady that you meet very, very early on in the very first area. But I don't think she's an option.
I can't even remember her. I thought for a second I thought
I don't
you
know
meant.
If she, I don't know if she even has a name. She
for a second,
does.
I thought you meant Kira Metz, witch who's hiding out in the.
She's all right.
Mm. Did you have sex with her?
Yeah. Sure. Why not? That's what The Witcher 3 is about, isn't it?
It's pretty much. It is definitely what The Witcher 1 is about. You got collectible cards.
By the way, I didn't exactly try for. It just kind of happened.
But no, The Witcher 3 is a very, very good game. What I was going to say actually is that I find it odd that The Witcher 3 kind of, or The Witcher in general, turned into this amazing, highly anticipated series, because The Witcher 1 was an incredibly wonky, buggy, broken game that was mostly famous for sex cards.
I didn't realize it was pretty broken and and stuff.
Horrific,
I mean, is it now,
loading times, loads of bugs. Oh, wow.
Is that like when it first came out? Because I know there's like a director's cut.
Yeah.
They
patched it quite a lot since then, but in a lot of ways it was like a troika game.
Right.
Listeners that think something like, you know, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines or something like that. It was horribly broken. And then The Witch 2, when everyone was really excited for it, and I always just found it a little bit weird, because the first game was primarily known as being cool but buggy game with the hilarious sex cards.
I think they get a lot of goodwill for generally how they respond to fixing that kind of stuff, though, and supporting their games and everything.
Sure.
Well, like I mentioned about the UI thing, like, they didn't have to at this point go back in and rejig a whole bunch of user interface stuff. But they did.
Yep. Deservingly. They are a good company, and they have done very well with The Witcher in general.
Yeah.
I would say the first game is probably worth a play. It is incredibly dated at this point.
I do own it on GOG. It was free at some point.
It uses the Neverwinter Nights engine, for fuck's sake. A heavily modified version of it.
Wow, yeah. I've also got The Witcher 2. Maybe I should play them in reverse order. Once I've finished The Witcher 3, I'll do Witcher 2 and then regress to the first game.
The Witcher 2 is really good. I'd almost say The Witcher 2 is my favourite of the series, though I don't know whether I'd stick by that, because it may not have dated quite so well.
I remember watching one of my friends playing through The Witcher, first Witcher, and man, you spend a lot of time in those fucking swamps. That's what I took away from that period of the game. They probably could have toned that down a bit.
Then again, that is also fairly true of The Witcher 3 when you're trying to get Roach through a fucking forest or swamp or anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I don't really like it when the game offers me a horse race, because it's like, oh, fuck. Gonna have to do the horse racing. That's not enjoyable.
I did none of them.
I think I did one part of a quest, basically.
Tell a lie. I think I've done one or two as part of bigger quests. But it doesn't matter
if you fail them, so it's okay.
I have never gone out of my way to actually do a horse race.
No.
Because Roach is an idiot. No matter which horse it is that is called Roach at that particular time.
Yeah. But no, anyway, I like going back to it in the brief periods where I have as much to play or write about.
I think that's probably a pretty good way of doing it, just because the combat will probably seem less aggravating.
It's not bad, because I have to relearn it briefly, obviously, and then go, oh, right, yeah, this is my fast attack, this is my signs, good.
I mean, I know
where I am now.
I still haven't played the final piece, the final expansion. I'm kind of saving that
for a review next year.
Yeah, basically. I hope to have it reviewed by Christmas, but...
Well,
it's
5 months, Tim.
I know, it's one of those things. I want to play it when I want to play it, because if I play it right now, I'm probably not going to enjoy it that much. The Hearts of Stone was very, very good. And anyone who has played The Witcher 3 should definitely play Hearts of Stone. It is arguably the best quest in The Witcher 3.
Right. I look forward to playing it probably next year or something.
Depends. Yeah, you're progressing further with The Witcher 3 than I thought you would, honestly.
That's because I like it. It's good. For a while, it's because I switched PCs and it was a good game to go, oh, look what my new PC can run well now. So that was, that got me back into it for a bit. And then, I just picked it up again because it was interesting.
Do you know something? That there is actually something newsworthy that we could have talked about.
All right, go ahead. Let's do it.
We didn't talk about the fact that Dota 2's international took place last week.
Is it finished?
It has finished. It finished on Saturday.
All right.
I missed most of it because I was horrifically ill.
who, you might not be answering my questions then. I was going to ask who was the person at the after party doing the music.
I didn't see that because I was horrifically ill. The opening ceremony was really fucking good though. They had, what's her name? I can't think of her name.
Sexist.
She's
typical
a
man. Can't remember her name.
Violinist dancer. She was on, I think, America's Got Talent. I searched for violinist.
I'm far too out of touch with that kind of culture. So
Lindsay Sterling.
Okay. I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. Miss Sterling.
I would recommend going and watching that bit of the opening ceremony. Not the bit with Gabe Newell, because he is boring.
But Gabe, he has lots of interesting things to say.
Not in this case.
He should have lots of interesting things to say. He just chooses not to. That's the frustrating thing about him.
Yeah. His opening speech felt very stilted, and yeah, it was not good. And then he basically finished up by saying, I'm probably the least interesting thing here, so I'll go and you can all enjoy the international.
Fair enough. At least he's self-aware.
Yeah. And then they had a nice little live musical performance, which was really goddamn good. No, the international was interesting for a couple of reasons in bigger Dota terms. The first being they finally announced when they're releasing the final hero from Dota, Underlord, who is coming in, is it next week or the week after? Something around then, anyway. It's around
23rd or something?
Maybe? Yeah, something like that. It's the 20-something.
That would be next week anyway.
Yeah. So that's happening. That's a thing.
Didn't they unveil some other hero as well?
Yes, they did. That's the other interesting thing. The first hero for Dota 2.
Oh,
the first
God.
Genuinely new hero. See, this was the point, like, when Underlord came out, that was the point when I thought they would say Dota was out of beta, but no.
Right, we're done now. Yeah.
It's like, okay, Dota, you know, Dota 2 has now reached parity with Dota, so that's when it's out of beta, presumably, but no.
No, they're going to push through. They're going to have a full set of Dota 2 only heroes, so another 100 or so later.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, Dota 2 left beta 2 or 3 years ago when they still had like 30 heroes to add or something like that.
Right.
And I wasn't expecting that. I was thinking that it would leave beta at the point when it had reached parity, and then they'd start adding new heroes and so on and so forth, but no. But yeah, we've got the Monkey King coming. Which is interesting, not least because that is a character who has appeared in every fucking MOBA under the sun.
Really?
Yeah,
like,
Sun...
In terms of, like, the archetype, do you mean? Or?
Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, Journey to the West and all that, is in League of Legends, Smite.
Oh, Journey to the West. I saw a film version of that recently. It was very good. It was a fairly recent, modern-ish one.
I think
2013, 14, something like that.
There have been a few recent attempts at doing it, and some of them have been good and some of them have been bad. I think one of them has... was it Jackie Chan was in one of them? I can't remember.
That might be the one I saw.
I forget. But yeah... Yes, what I find interesting about this, and I'm sorry this is going to be totally boring for you, but fuck you, you talked about FIFA Ultimate sticker book.
Not much. I tried not to get too far into it.
Don't worry, I'm not going to get too far into this. But Monkey King was teased in Dota, as in the original. He was going to be the next hero released for that, before Dota 2 came about. The thing is, the concept for him was already used when they reworked Phantom Lancer in Dota 2. They basically turned... In Dota 2, Phantom Lancer was broken as fuck. They totally changed the hero, reworked all his abilities, and they turned him into what Monkey King was supposed to be.
Right.
But now they're releasing Monkey King, so I'm curious as to how this is going to...
He's presumably not going to be identical to Phantom Lancer, because that would be silly.
Yes, it would. But it does look like it's going to be, from the trailer at least, another very illusion-heavy hero.
Okay.
Maybe he's just going to be the previous Phantom Lancer.
What, just broken and a bit rubbish?
Yeah, the one that everyone fucking hated.
And then they'll redo Monkey King as, I don't know, one of the other Dota 2 heroes.
Yeah.
Shit, I should be able to name at least one of them.
Yeah, but you'd have to name an illusion-based hero, which would be...
Fuck. What's that like? Wisp guy. It's like an, he's like a wispy orb character.
There is Io, also known as Wisp.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of. Almost certainly not.
It is an orb that is in actual fact just a particle effect.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of. What I'm thinking of.
You could have gone for Nagasiren or Terrorblade. But,
hey, you don't know who Marco Royce is, okay? So
no, I don't. And if I saw his name written down, I wouldn't be able to pronounce it either.
No Dota knowledge from me. I'm sorry.
Well, so, wasn't Mitchell Royce Spider Jerusalem's editor at Transmetropolitan?
Yes. Now he's going to be on the cover of FIFA 17. It's a bit of an unusual choice from EA there, but hey, that's who they've gone with.
That's a weird crossover, but if Warren Ellis is okay with it, so am I.
Yeah, you know, they've obviously come to some kind of licensing deal. That's going to be a new mode in Ultimate Team. It's going to be a crossover with the graphic novel. So did you see any of the final of the international then, if you were in Vomit City or whatever?
I saw two of the matches and then I went to sleep.
Were they good?
Yes, they were.
Good finale?
Yep, there were. It was a really good tournament in general, from the group stages right the way through.
Good.
It was really good. There was. It was not like the one tournament you watched, which was rubbish.
which even though I knew very little, I could tell was a bit rubbish.
Yeah. No,
I mean, partly because the commentators were inferring that as well. But
no, this year was really, really good. It says a lot for the current state of the game as well, that of the 110 heroes currently in the game, I think in total 106 of them were picked or banned.
Right, yeah.
So pretty much everything is viable, is the thing from that. There is no one dominant strategy, no one dominant hero or anything like that, which there usually is. You know, the international normally highlights one or two heroes as being really, really good.
Right.
But no, pretty much everything seems viable. Pretty much every strategy, every hero can work in some way, with a few minor exceptions. That says a lot for the state of the game. And also makes me slightly worry about the next couple of patches, because
and the new characters that they're inventing and stuff.
the new characters won't immediately be into captain's mode, which is the tournament variant. They kind of test them out in pleb play first.
Sure. That makes sense.
But
yawning. I watched too much of EA's press conference.
I don't blame you. But no, it makes me worry a little, because I mean, every meta changes, and I think it'll be a while before we see another meta that's as varied as this one. Like, it doesn't matter what happens. Heroes will be changed, items will be added or changed, and this is inevitably going to change the flow of the game. It's going to break some heroes. It's going to make them useless. It's going to make some strats more dominant than others. It's just what happens.
Right.
So yeah, it's a good time for Dota, I think. Although I haven't played it much lately, to be perfectly honest.
It's good that it's in a healthy place.
It is.
And I'm sure Valve will be pleased. I'll be making some more money from it.
Yeah. Paul is I think the total prize pool was $20.6 million this year.
See, one of the FIFA things announced was that you can win $1.3 million, I think, if you're the bestest of the best at FIFA across the 12 months of their new tournament thing.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad, you know. It's pretty...
I mean, when I say it's 20.1 million or whatever it was, or 21 million, that's the prize pool for the entire tournament, divided between everyone.
Yeah, I don't know what the 1.3 million, I doubt that's for one person, but it might be.
Might be 1.3 million divided up between the top 10 or something like that.
Say
or,
something like, yeah, maybe.
Or who knows, it might be 1.3 million for top place and then like 100,000 for second and...
Yeah,
50,
or it might just all go to the top position, because I mean that's a very football thing to do, you know. You have to win the league to get the trophy, you know. It doesn't really matter if you're second, that's just tough.
There is a lot to be said about esports at the moment. I think it is definitely a growing industry, but it's also one that's fraught with problems. I don't just mean things like the ridiculous gambling scandals and so on and so forth, but just the vague impenetrability of it. Like, you can watch Evo tournaments, you can watch people playing Street Fighter 5 at a high level, and you can understand what's going on. It's a lot more difficult to watch a game of Dota 2.
I don't know, I don't think I can understand what's going on at Evo. Not really, not on an in-depth level. Like, I can go, all right, that person's winning.
Not on a technical high level thing, but you can watch it and you can go, oh, you know, he's blocked these five attacks in a row and counted. He did that really well. That's impressive. Yes. Whereas with Dota 2, you go, oh, he's teleported and bought a thing and that, oh, wow. It's rare to have those moments where you can tell that something amazing has just happened.
And obviously with FIFA, it's pretty obvious because you're just playing a game of football. So that's, you know.
This I think, is kind of one of the fundamental problems with esports, and it's something that I've been meaning to ask numerous esports people about in a series of interviews I've been meaning to do for a while, if it weren't for the fact that my fucking illness keeps getting in the way of doing any of this stuff.
It's dying term.
It's basically really hard for me to schedule interviews if I don't know if I'm actually going to be alive at any given time on any given day.
It's all right for the interviewee to cancel. It's a bit unusual for the, the person doing the interviewing to cancel.
And I don't,
I
don't like doing email interviews.
No, they're not ideal. Definitely.
But I want to get someone on Skype and have a nice chat with them.
You also get a lot better material because you can adapt to what they're saying and and read how open they are to being asked other questions and stuff.
You can follow up on things.
So it's like being a journalist, people. Exciting, behind the scenes.
I genuinely, I love doing interviews, though they do make me very, very nervous. I'm not a huge fan of dealing with people most of the time.
I'm usually all right after the first 5 minutes or so.
I'm fine when I'm doing them. It's just beforehand, I note down every single possible talking point that I want to discuss and so on, just so I've got a list to refer to if the conversation stalls or anything. I love doing interviews. I love talking to people who are passionate about games, about what they're doing. Have we got much more to talk about on this podcast?
No, not really.
I want to throw out a question to the listeners who have managed to stay with us this long.
Go ahead.
I did a piece last week, I think it was, called Unreviewed, where I took a look at a couple of games that I had not played enough to review, but wrote a few things about, because a few times our supporters, the lovely, lovely people that they are, basically said, you know, you mention these games on the podcasts, but don't write things about them. Maybe you could do something like that. What do you guys think? Do you want to see more of that stuff? Because I have got plenty of bits and pieces like that that I could certainly write about, that I've played for a little while. But on the other hand, if there's not much interest, if it's not something you think is particularly useful or helpful in any way, I won't bother. So any thoughts you have on that, you know what to do.
Indeed. Send us a carrier pigeon to the bunker. Hopefully it'll get through the defences.
Hopefully.
And then we'll read it. Yeah. So that's probably about it, to be honest.
Yeah, we've wittered on for a while, and there are inevitably more things I could witter on about, but we can save that for maybe next week.
Maybe. So, Deus Ex things coming up, obviously.
I think
it's bad from me. Actually, there's another Hitman came out today. I'll probably try and play that if I get a chance.
Yeah, we should. I think we may have to definitely do a podcast next week just so we can talk about Deus Ex a bit.
That sounds like a good idea.
Hitman came out today. I'm still downloading it because my connection is Isle of Man connection. So, Bangkok Dangerous. Are we both going to try and take a look at that, or?
I might be able to play a bit tonight.
One or both of us will have a look at it anyway.
See how it goes.
Yeah. Maybe write a thing for Thursday or something, I don't know.
That's the podcast, everyone. Thanks for being with us. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Love you.
And silent under the dawn of that last great day.
The reason I'll end up being called Andy McNabb was quite simply that there was symmetry in the name and it fit quite nice on the cover of Bravo 2.0.